Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. You can meet authors Linda Hazelstrom and Rick Mills this weekend at the Custer Library, next weekend at the library in Hermosa. The two are pairing up to present Musings from Metro Hermosa, and we're pleased to have both of them with us today from SDPB's Black Hills Bureau in Rapid City. Linda Hazelstrom is an award-winning poet and writer. She's the author of 17 books of nonfiction and poetry. She's conducted hundreds of readings, workshops, talks, and lectures about writing, publishing, ranching, and land use for audiences that range from elementary students to senior citizens. Her latest book is called Gathering from the Grasslands, a Plains Journal. Linda, welcome back to In the Moment.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And now Rick Mills, he's a fifth-generation resident of Western South Dakota. He's a lifelong railroad enthusiast. He currently serves as the director of the South Dakota State Railroad Museum in Hill City. That's a position he's held since the museum opened in 2010. Mills wrote and published his first book on railroad history in 1985 while a freshman at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. Since then, 5 books on regional railroad history. He's co-authored and contributed to 5 other books, produced articles, scripts, and photo essays for history publications and video productions. His most recent work, Frames of Reference, a South Dakota Railroad Almanac. Rick, thanks for coming back as well.
Pleasure to be here, Laurie.
Now, this sounds like such a fun conversation. Not only are these, two really well-known authors, but you've known each other for a long time. And Linda, I feel like I should just turn the microphone over to the two of you and start some of these conversations. But maybe you could start by telling us, how you guys met maybe the first time. And
I think this is Rick's story.
Well,
all right, Rick, this is your story to begin. I don't know the story.
Well, I'll tell you what, I met Linda, actually, I've known her all my life in one form or another, but when we really got to know each other back when I was thinking about doing my first book back in 1984, I was working in Hermosa, and I was a freshman at the School of Mines, and we were putting together my professor told us to do a project and just a paper about something you know something about. For me, it was railroads, really no competition there. So what I did is I put together, about a 10-page paper, got to the end of the project or the paper. She put a big, nice red A on the paper and said, "See me after class." And I thought, oh boy, what have I done wrong? Well, long story short, she told me that her father had been an engineer on the Union Pacific down in Nebraska for over 40 years. And she said, "You ought to take this project or this paper and make it into a book." Well, at 19, you're thinking about, one, getting a good grade on your papers, girls and cars, not necessarily in that order. But so what I did is I'd known Linda for many years. I took the idea to her and I said, "How about you just take all of my ideas, all the photos and everything else, and, do a book, and then we'll put both our names on it." Well, any of you that have ever met Linda know that she has a very stern, direct way of putting her idea. Yeah, and you laugh, but hey, I think there's probably others around the state laughing too.
Right.
Linda told me in no uncertain terms that I will not do it for you, but I will teach you how to do it yourself. And with a couple of lessons and a lot of patience on her part, that's how I published my first book on Black Hills Railroad history.
And you can tell he got the lesson down because he's published 6 more books.
Yeah. Well, she's a great teacher.
Right. Rick, what was that moment like for you at 19? Did you feel sort of taken aback, or did you have an awareness then that, she's right, this is a lesson I need to learn, I'm glad she said it to me?
Well, in Sunday school you learn about taking how to fish. But, I didn't really make the comparison until a lot later, but that was the best thing she could have done for me.
Right. Linda, I bet you do get that a lot, where people say, "I have this great story I want to give you because I know you can write it."
Hundreds of times. And out of those hundreds of times, I could probably count on the fingers of 2 hands how many people actually did what Rick did, take the advice, mm-hmm. which takes time and effort and energy on my part, and do it and do a book, and not only do one, but do several more and keep expanding and getting better. I mean, that's what could be better for a teacher.
Right. What was that process of teaching like? You know, how did you work with him?
Well, I'm not sure that I remember many of the details. It doesn't seem to me in retrospect that I did a whole lot. But what I normally do is sit down with people and have them look at what they've got and then say, okay, here's what your options are. What do you remember about it, Rick?
Well, basically, what I remember is that I went out to your house a couple times, showed you, just like you said, showed you what I had already done, and then you made some you know, constructive criticisms of what I had done, and then said, this is what you can probably do if, depending upon, you know, how far you want to go with it.
And I did know some printers and some people in Rapid City that I thought would probably help him and do what he wanted to do at a reasonable rate. So that was knowledge that I had that he might not have had. But
Rick, did she give you handouts?
Well, yeah, there were tests. There were tests over coffee. I remember that.
Okay, yes. I have some handouts from Linda Hazelstrom. They're really good handouts, too.
They are.
Yeah. I've noticed the handout queen. That's right. Writers everywhere.
and if anybody else has it on their bookshelf, she did a book back, oh, this would have been probably the early 80s, called The Book Book. And I literally made that into the Bible I was using, and I still have that copy, and it's dog-eared, you know, so you can tell which sections I really had to brush up on at the time.
I don't have that one. Is it still available?
I imagine I can find you a copy, Lori.
All right, I'll write you a check. We're doing business here on the radio.
I've done another one that's a writer's handbook, too. That's a writer's notebook recently that has a lot of stuff in it, too, that's good, so...
You know, when you look at Gathering from the Grasslands, A Plains Journal, you can learn a lot by just reading your work in that as well. There's examples there that inspire you to just immediately go out and write yourself.
I think everyone ought to keep a journal. Oh, yes. Yeah. And partly, I mean, my first published book, 1987, which was... come to think of it, 2 years after Rick's first published book, was called Windbreak, and it was a journal of my life on the ranch. And this book, 17 books later, is a journal of my life on the ranch. And in that time, I've worked with hundreds of people, but I always suggest that you keep a journal. No matter how boring you think your life is, you could learn from it if you record it.
Rick, do you journal? Do you keep a journal?
I do not. And just sitting here listening to Linda, one thing I never did.
We're done here.
Yeah, and you know, and that maybe goes back to just me being young and male, and you know, not thinking through these things through, you know, and thinking, oh, I don't need to do that. But gosh, I wish I had.
You take photographs though, and that's useful. Yeah. That's a good thing too.
That's one thing I've always loved photography. When I was back in 4-H, I learned how to use a camera and you know some of the basics of it. And that's something I've always done and still do to this day is shooting photos.
And they say if the photograph is worth 1,000 words, so you've probably journaled, you know, really a lot if you think about it.
Well, that could be. Yeah, that's right. But you know, I never even have really thought of myself as a writer like you. You know, who am I look up to? I chronicle history, and you know, and then I throw in a few captions and I make the stories kind of weave together. So, but yeah, I'll never be the writer you are.
Now, speaking as a person who's 20 some years older than Rick, I will say that I think it would be a good idea, Rick, if you took those pictures and started writing down who and what they are now before you forget.
Oh, yes. Yeah, my yellow ledger is becoming my best friend
now. That's good.
It's a daily practice, right, Linda? I mean, you have to get into those habits. It seems daunting at first where you think, how do you have time? And then you realize, so I just started journaling again because I've been too busy. I miss it so much. And really, I mean, you start with 15 minutes in the morning and build from there. And it's not as, you know, it doesn't take as much discipline as you might think. It becomes part of who you are again.
And it doesn't need to be brilliant. I mean, I keep my journal under the other pillow on my bed, under the dog. And I grab it first thing in the morning. And believe me, the first things I write in the morning are not particularly brilliant. They may be observations on the weather or something that I dreamed. But they're there. They're down. I have journaled. Then that's a beginning. And then you just keep going from there.
Talk about Hermosa a little bit, because as we, you know, call this talk Musings from Metro Hermosa, talk about what it means to sort of be a writer in a place like Hermosa, a beautiful place, but somewhat isolated from, you know, a whole bunch of writing groups and, you know, book talks that are, you know, fairly frequent.
Wow.
We
both look at each other with a dumb look on our face. It's like, you know, Hermosa, it's so close to Rapid City in a lot of ways, but yet it's farther away than 20 miles. And, right. You know, it's a community unto itself. While a lot of folks, you know, it's a bedroom community for Rapid City, to us, it's always been kind of its own little town where we had our own certain families, you know, did things together. Certain families went to certain churches and everything else. But it always comes together when the chips are down. It comes to that community when there's a fire, when there's a family that has a medical issue or whatever. It seems like we always show up, and it always, you know, we all rally together. And that's one of the things that has really struck me over the years, that it is unto itself its own little, community. I guess we keep using the word community, but it really is that way. Everybody is a good neighbor to, you know, there's always exceptions to that. But I mean, like I say, when the chips are down, and Linda, you know, chronicles that a lot in her books.
Right.
And
right.
In fact, I think I'll just turn it over. I think she might even have something that she...
Well, one of the things I said in my book, and we were sort of talking about this on the way up this morning because we were delicately discussing some politics without knowing particularly each other's political views. But one of the things that I have said is the day that we vote, it's a passage in this book, when we vote... everyone votes, and we're always particularly polite to all of the people going in and out, perhaps particularly to those that we know very well voted differently than we do. Hmm. That's one of the things that I really cherish about Hermosa. We might ferociously disagree about all kinds of matters, but as Rick said, for the things that matter, we'll be side by side on the fire line fighting fire on somebody's place, and politics doesn't matter, religion doesn't matter, gender doesn't matter. You're all there helping the community, and that's what it seems to me can be easily forgotten in a community. If all you do, your contact with other people is Facebook, it takes face-to-face contact and face-to-face rubbing together. A South Dakota writer whose name is escaping me now said that in the city, all the nuts grinding together rub off the rub edges. The nuts in the country are not subjected to this grinding process.
Who was that? I like that.
I wish it was original, but somebody else said it first.
Rick, tell me a little bit about Frames of Reference, the South Dakota Railroad album. Tell me about that book. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, the book itself came about as a project from the State Railroad Museum. We looked at doing a book early on because there are so many fantastic photos in our own collection. But this was a book that came about from a collection of photos I first became aware of back in the 1970s from a photographer named Otto Perry in Colorado. His photos were shot not only in Colorado and throughout the Midwest and all over the country for that matter, but he chronicled a time in western South Dakota and eastern Wyoming from the 1920s to the 1950s of railroads that weren't documented anywhere else in photography. Once I found that out, I thought, you know, I used a few of them in my earlier books, but through the help and the funding of the Ellman Foundation there in Sioux Falls, we put together a project where we would put a lot of these photos to use that had never been published, showing railroads in primarily the Black Hills, but all over the western part of the state. I even have some that were shot around Sioux Falls and in Pierre and some of that area that really showed an era of railroading that hadn't been chronicled. And so that's how it came about. And it came out in October, and it's been selling very well. And primarily, it's a photo book, but Mr. Perry, when he shot all of these photos, he was absolutely meticulous in documenting the locations the speeds of the train numbers, everything. And it's just really, from my perspective, a remarkable history. And we're very fortunate to have been able to put it together from the museum.
This is Rick Mills. The book is called Frames of Reference, a South Dakota Railroad Album. Linda Hazelstrom, the latest book is Gathering from the Grasslands, a Plains Journal. We're going to run out of time here, Linda, but this one is on my bedside table, and I sort of dip into it as needed, which is frequently. frequently needed in my life.
And you're saying it helps you go to sleep.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. It helps me reconnect with the things that are important. So thank you for that book as well.
Thanks, Lori,
for being here. Thanks. You can see them at the Custer County Library February 10th, 2 to 4, Friday, February 16th, 4 to 6 at the Hermosa Library. The talk is called Musings from Metro Hermosa.